If Minnesota wants to be the team that they thought they were, they have to win this game. They have to.
It's the TD Fantasy. The TD Fantasy Podcast. TD Fantasy Podcast. With your hosts Paige DeMacos, Jamie Eisner, and Jake Arians.
Welcome into the TD Fantasy Podcast. Paige DeMacos, Jamie Eisner. No Jake Arians today. But we will survive because I am riding high. I am basically two people at this point because I am so excited about the Bears' victory last night.
I want you to walk me through that.
I'm two people. At this point. I have the amount of energy of two people. Okay. That's the amount of energy. I worked out this morning, and I think I scared everybody in the gym because I was just like floating throughout the gym.
Just levitating.
Levitating. And I was wearing a Mitch Please shirt, so they were all highly entertained by my attitude this morning. It's honestly kind of scary how much impact the Bears being good has made on my attitude. But you know what? It's been a while, and it feels good. And they beat the Rams. So I'm going to say that like six times throughout this podcast.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to remind it. And we'll get into that game in a little bit.
Oh, we're definitely going to get into that game. But there are quite a few other games we got to get into and some breaking news that happened this morning that we got to talk about first. So as far as timing goes, this one doesn't make a whole lot of sense because we'll get into the game later on. But the Raiders beat the Steelers, okay? And Ben got hurt for a little bit. It was a weird game. As Jake mentioned on the Friday's podcast, the Steelers tend to lay an egg on the road in Oakland. Mm-hmm. This is a common theme.
They did it again.
And they did it again. And it was a bad loss for the Steelers as the AFC continues to get tighter and tighter. And the Ravens almost pulled off a victory that would have made things even closer. So this is interesting timing by the Raiders to fire GM Reggie McKenzie.
It really is. And look, this was a matter of time. I think we all know who the real GM in Oakland is. Since the day they handed John Gruden that 10-year contract, he was going to be judge, jury, and executioner of this Oakland Raiders franchise. And he is going to tear down that team and rebuild it in his image. And he has begun the process of doing that. We will see if he's able to be successful with it. He needs some time to do that, but I do not think he will be based on past history and based even on some of the moves he's made this year. Aside from the Amari Cooper trade, which looks like it's going to work out, it's working out for both sides equally,
yes, absolutely,
which we thought was a huge Raiders win only, is actually going to work out for both sides. I'm not sure I'm really bullish on the future of the Oakland Raiders, but yeah, the timing's odd. I know the official phrasing is mutually parted ways, and you can go back a few weeks to hear what Jake's thoughts about that phrase initially were, but all indications are that he had, according to reports, that he went in and talked to his scouts and told them that he was fired.
Yeah.
So this was not a like, okay, Reggie's finally going to get out this decision. You know, I think he's a good GM. I think he'll land on his feet somewhere, whether as assistant GM or somewhere in the front office. There are a lot of titles in front offices of NFL teams. He will land on his feet somewhere. But yeah, this relationship was never going to continue as is. Maybe gets a little bit of an opportunity to, as we've talked about with like the Packers, to get a jump on finding your next head coach. Maybe he has a chance to jump on finding his next job in the front office.
Yeah, this was never going to work. This is John Gruden's team. Don't be mistaken. Reggie McKenzie had nothing to do with any of the trades that were happening. These were John Gruden moves. This is, as you said, judge, jury, and executioner. It's his team. And for better or for worse, that is a scary thing. It's very much like how Bill Belichick runs the New England Patriots. But Bill Belichick's Bill Belichick, and the resume speaks for itself.
Very few teams get afforded that opportunity.
I mean,
we've seen Andy Reid in Philadelphia and then in Kansas City.
Yep.
Mike Holmgren in Seattle and Green Bay had that opportunity from time to time. I mean, Bill Belichick is obviously the big example of that. You don't get to see this a lot.
No.
And
usually it comes after some success. Not
sure.
Not right away.
Usually like doesn't this. Come because you've been making, you know, yelling Spider 2Y Banana in the ESPN booth for 10 years.
Yes.
But if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know my feelings on John Gruden as a coach. I think that he's been one of the most overhyped and overrated coaches in NFL history, based on his performance in Tampa Bay, which again, people remember the Super Bowl. He did not build that team. He coached the team. He gets credit. He coached that team to the Super Bowl. Tony Dungy was not able to coach the team he built to a Super Bowl. John Gruden was, but that team went downhill immediately after that. He was just really nothing special there. But, I mean, the Raiders made their bed. They wanted this personality. They wanted this coach. They wanted this feeling going into Las Vegas. This is what they're going to get.
Yeah, it's interesting timing. I don't think it listen, after a victory against the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that you shouldn't have beaten, I think it's weird from that perspective. But at the same time, like, I told you off the air that I thought that Reggie McKenzie looked miserable there. And I think on top of that, he looked captive. I think he just looked captive in those press conferences. Like he was just a dummy sitting there, not being able to do what he's supposed to do. And listen, that's not fun for anybody. It's especially not fun for somebody who is like Reggie McKenzie. He's well respected. He's been a good GM. He's made good moves and should have that relationship with John Gruden, but Gruden's not going to allow for that to happen.
And it's almost like a weird situation if you've ever worked in middle management where you're being asked to hand down a decision to the people that you manage that you don't agree with, but yeah. The people above you said, this is what we're doing. That's what Reggie McKenzie looked like. He had to sit there and defend the Khalil Mack trade as if it was his idea. Nobody really thought it was his idea, but he had to defend it as if he was on board with it and that he liked it. He just kind of – look, this was never going to work there with the two of them. Now he's gone. Gruden's going to continue to have full control over the team, and they will live or die based on Gruden's decisions. There'll be nobody for John Gruden and nobody for Mark Davis to blame but themselves if this does not work out.
Yeah, to be determined, but so far, not so good when you see what Khalil Mack is doing in Chicago and even what Amari Cooper is doing in Dallas. Jamie and I have both been very harsh on Amari Cooper, but I have to give him credit.
He's been great there.
He's been unbelievable and totally revitalized that offense.
To give Gruden and the Raiders a little bit of credit, that's still a trade I do if I'm them.
Yeah, for
100
sure.
100 times out of 100. They got a first-round pick for a guy that nobody else was going to give a first-round pick for.
Yep.
So they got absolute full credit there. And I know we'll talk about him in the game he had for Dallas later. But again, that's now looking like a good pick for Dallas.
Yeah,
possible to have a good trade for everybody involved.
Agreed.
And it's looking like that's what's going to be the case there.
All right, we don't have to spend much time on this, but we're going to go through all the games. The Jets and the Bills, Darnold gets injured again during this game. Listen, there's not much fantasy value for these teams, and there's not much football value for these teams at this point. Pretty much just trying to figure out whether these teams are going to keep their coaches. I think McDermott has a better chance of keeping his job than Todd Bowles does, but they come away with the victory 27-23 over the Buffalo Bills.
The only fantasy takeaway I have here is that Josh Allen is in two QB leagues. He's in that bottom end of QB2 play because he's running the ball a lot. He had about 101 yards and a touchdown on the ground this game. That's not a fluke. He is running the ball way more than I ever anticipated he was going to. He's still relatively ineffective through the air. He's going to have accuracy issues. I'm not a Josh Allen fan. I don't think he's going to be a successful NFL quarterback. But in terms of fantasy, the rushing yards really elevate his total. And again, if you're in two QB leagues or you're in a league where you can play off QB at flex or offensive position, every place you play calls it something different. He is in consideration for that spot there. But really nobody else is. LeSean McCoy left this game with an injury early. You know, he was just starting to get back into maybe if you had a two flex league consideration. I'm just not going to feel comfortable starting him either week.
No. The next game we're going to talk about, another weird one. The biggest news of it was probably that Odell Beckham Jr. sat this game. That was a huge fantasy impact because that was not something that we were prepared for. I got that news over the weekend.
Brutal news if you needed it for the postseason.
Yeah, that's tough news to get because you're not going to be able to make up for Odell Beckham Jr.'s points. Hopefully you weathered the storm and were able to get through. The Giants put up 40 points. They beat the Redskins. At this point, the Redskins were a team that at the beginning of the season, Jamie, Jake, and I both, all three of us, Jamie and I were lower on them than Jake was, but this team was overachieving early on, and obviously I think a huge part of this, you have to talk about the injuries they've sustained. Two quarterbacks going down, three of their offensive linemen are gone. This team is a shell of what it was, and 40-16 was a disaster, and wondering whether or not Jay Gruden's going to stick around another year.
Yeah, you know, the Jay Gruden thing is complicated, and I know I've mentioned this on the show, but, you know, you let two pretty damn good coordinators walk out of Washington, and Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, in favor of Jay Gruden. And again, that's a lot of times you don't have much of a choice there. Rarely are they upgrading coordinators for the job that the head coach gets fired for. But this would be the weird year to fire him.
Yes.
Because I think they've actually, up until this point, they have overachieved.
100%.
I did not think this was a playoff caliber team. Mm-hmm. I think I had them at 4 or 5 wins when we did our preseason show. And maybe that was a little bit low. But this team was overachieving. There just becomes a point where you just don't have enough guys.
Yeah. They don't have enough guys.
They don't. Josh Johnson.
Yeah. Yes.
I didn't even know. I forgot Josh Johnson was in the league before this
week.
Agreed. Yeah. Like, it's been a long time since Josh Johnson has been relevant.
Yes.
At some point, look, if you're going to make a move, if a high-profile coach becomes available and you say, this is our opportunity, I can understand it. But if you're just firing Jay Gruden for the sake of firing Jay Gruden, this was not the year to do it. It was the underachieving years with Kirk Cousins that may have been the years to do it. But for this game, on the Redskins' standpoint, there's really no fantasy value anywhere at this point.
No.
I think Adrian Peterson is a risky, risky flex play going forward. Chris Thompson still doesn't look fully healthy, and that offense is predicated on a quarterback being competent to get him the ball. He's not going to be able to have that same kind of success as he had years past with Josh Johnson around. I know Johnson ran the ball around a little bit, and I know what I just said about Josh Allen, but I don't think Josh Johnson is somebody that should be on your fantasy radar at all. On the Giants side of things, really none of the receivers did anything.
Nope.
I know Sterling Shepard caught the touchdown, Russell Shepard caught a touchdown, but nobody really did anything there. But we need to talk about how freaking good Saquon Barkley
is. Yeah, he's a phenom.
He's the number two pick in drafts next year, right? It's going Gurley 1, Saquon 2, right? I mean,
I would dabble in taking Saquon 1.
He is so good.
Yeah, he is unbelievable. He's a complete phenom. I know that it's been one of the biggest topics of discussion, whether or not the Giants made the right move. You cannot deny his talent. That team needs a quarterback, though, because Eli Manning's not going to be that guy going forward.
So I want to ask you that question. That's a great point, because I've been thinking about this a lot. Let's say we're redrafting today on December 10th.
Yeah.
And you're the Giants there. Baker's off the board at 1. Do you still take Saquon there? Because to me, I'm not – like, I look at the other quarterbacks there, and yes, they desperately need a quarterback, and they're not going to find one in this
draft. I'm not sold on any of the other guys.
I'm not sure I'm not still taking Saquon.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I like Darnold, but he's got a long way to go. And I'm fascinated by – if Darnold didn't have that week one game, if there would be a lot more panic.
I agree.
In New York.
Yep.
So, again, he got hurt. He's young. I still like his future, but I'm not sold on him yet. Josh Rosen at times looks like, wow, this guy's got it.
Yep.
But at times he looks like
he's going to be happy feet, bad decision making. Yeah.
I've never liked Josh Allen.
No.
Accuracy issues don't get better. And we're starting to see that with Darnold a little bit. Accuracy issues in college don't get better when you go to the pros.
My only kind of argument back is I would have liked to see Sam Darnold in a competent offense. Because at the same time, the Jets offense has basically no playmakers.
Yeah.
Like none. And I think that has a lot to do with what
and
we're seeing.
And being with Shermer would be a lot different. I think
watching him under Shermer, I think watching him with Odell Beckham Jr. and Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram would have been a much truer test of what we were going to see from
Odell
him.
Odell Beckham is light years above Robbie Anderson.
Yeah, 100%. But at the same time, I don't think at this point you can look and go, the Giants made a horrible decision.
That's the thing.
I think that's the argument that was happening at the beginning of the season a lot was, what the hell did the Giants do? Because Eli's play was so poor. But at this point, I don't think you can look around and go, wow, any of these quarterbacks, aside from Baker, who was taken off the board ahead of time, and if he was there at 2, I would have...
Well, Baker's still the pick there, period. Yeah. But in this case, they wouldn't have had a chance.
Exactly. But I think at this point, you look and you go, it's all right. It wasn't a horrible franchise-changing move.
Yeah, I don't think. Position scarcity is a problem, and I understand that. And they do need to address the quarterback position. I don't think Kyle Lalletta is going to be it if he even comes out. But right now, if you took a chance on Saquon Barkley in the middle of the first round in your fantasy drafts, you are thrilled. Because, again, he's going to very well be – he's not the MVP. That's going to be Gurley or Mahomes with the ratings. But everybody else, I mean, he could be the third or fourth best fantasy player by the time it's all said and done this year.
Yep, 100%. All right, the next game we're going to talk about is the Saints and the Buccaneers. For the first half of the game – the Buccaneers were controlling what was happening for the New Orleans Saints, but Jameis did Jameis things as their offense in the second half. Sean Payton made adjustments. This team looked much different in the second half. But I will say, if you're an Alvin Kamara owner and you're a Drew Brees owner, you've been starting those two. These are back-to-back weeks where you haven't had great weeks. Drew Brees only 201 yards, 1 touchdown. Mark Ingram was actually the top rusher in this game, 52 yards and 1 touchdown. So I think Michael Thomas still gets 98 yards but doesn't get in the end zone. What you've gotten used to from Kamara and Brees and Thomas, you didn't get the last 2 weeks.
So this is a little bit of a flashback. If you own Drew Brees over the last like 5 or 6 years at any point, the big knock on him in fantasy was that he was never a strong fantasy playoff performer, that he tended to have – either underwhelming or just blah weeks when you got to around week 14, week 15, week 16. He tends to have his average, not always. There are some seasons where he's met his season averages leading up to it. But he always kind of throws in a dud week right somewhere in the fantasy postseason. And again, they won the game, so in real life they're moving 100%. On. But for the fantasy purposes, there's always that risk there, and you can't not start Drew Brees.
No.
Unless you have Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have a better option to start a quarterback. You have to kind of roll and deal with it. Same thing with Alvin Kamara. You're not benching Alvin Kamara.
No.
They look a little out of whack right now. Like, I thought there was a period of time in that first half. I didn't think they were going to lose the game, but I thought they would have to like scrape by with a Will Lutz field goal or something.
Yeah, the blocked the blocked punt is really what changed this game, because if they don't block that punt, I don't know if the Saints are winning this football game. That really changed the momentum of this football game and allowed them to kind of get it going and give the Saints good field goal or good a field position early on in the second half. But listen, this was a hard fought game against a Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense that has been lit up by a lot of offenses.
This was a game where I thought there would be a lot of fantasy value.
I agree.
Relatively little. I mean, Michael Thomas had an okay fantasy game. If you're PPR, you're fine with Michael Thomas in that. But if you're in a standard format with a no touchdown, it's just an okay game. Same deal for Mike Evans. You know, this was a game where I thought everybody would have a really strong game.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mark Ingram gets in that end zone on that run, and it really pushes him over the top. But nobody had a great game here. So I think there were a lot of very disappointed fantasy owners that really were expecting, wow, I've got Saints players against the worst an historically bad defense to open the postseason. I'm going to be in great shape. And turns out you weren't.
Yeah, this is another thing that you and I will get to as we discuss some other games. This is the time of the year, though, where things tend to even out a little bit. You don't see these high-flying, huge games. You see offenses have to travel. You see defenses. Guys are playing for their jobs at the end of the season. There's a little bit.
It's a lot of film on you, too. Like,
yeah.
You're facing a divisional team for the second time. I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of factors.
A lot of factors going into these games. So as you see December, you change. We'll talk about some other games where the weather definitely impacts how these teams are playing. But December football, there's a difference.
Tightens up. It really does. And we talked about this before, and we'll get into it in a little bit. We're trying to go in order, but the Sunday night game.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I said when I walked in, besides saying, how was your victory Monday, was this is the type of football that we sometimes forget for the first couple months of the season, that it gets to December, it gets to January, and it's the defensive teams that really start to shine.
Yeah, you got to grind out victories. Mm-hmm. The reality is, it's a nice storyline that the NFL in one season has completely changed to being the Big 12. That's not true.
No.
One, change doesn't happen that fast. And two, defense still wins championships.
Yep.
And that's the truth. If you have a solid defense, defense travels. Yes. That's the truth. And when the weather changes, if you have to go play in the cold weather on prime time in a tough environment, the high-flying offense isn't going to fly.
No.
And that's not just a Chicago thing. That's a lot of places that you have to go play. And it gets tough, and not everybody gets to play in a dome, New Orleans.
Yeah.
So if you have to go on the road, it's a much tougher experience. Even going to Tampa. I mean, they struggle on the road in Tampa Bay against a much inferior team. All right, this is the weirdest game of the week. This game is strange because at one point I look down and go, okay, the Patriots are completely blowing this game away. They're gonna completely control this game. From a fantasy perspective, Tom Brady had 358 yards and 3 touchdowns, about as good of a fantasy day as you could possibly have. He had a great game. But the end of this game was wild for me. I have watched the end of this football game so many times because I am trying desperately to figure out why Bill Belichick thought that they were going to Hail Mary that pass from where they were. Because Ryan Tannehill can't throw that pass.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to figure out why Gronkowski and guys are back there waiting for a tip ball when you know Ryan Tannehill, he's not Patrick Mahomes. There's one person that can make that throw.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes and maybe Aaron Rodgers.
There are a couple guys that could get it close.
But not Ryan Tannehill.
Not with his injury.
And this is huge implications for the AFC playoffs, because the Patriots at one point, you and I have talked about this a lot on this podcast, if the Chiefs have to go to Foxborough in the postseason, I'm not picking them to win that game. Now they have a 2-game lead on New England, and I don't think the Patriots are going to be able to get past that.
There's a fascinating discussion to be had, and I think I want to ask Bruce Arians about this on Wednesday, but I'll ask you to think about it as I talk about this game. Who's the second best team in the AFC? because I don't know. But in terms of this game, yeah.
Part of me wants to tell you that if Baltimore was able to pull off, they should have won that football game.
I mean,
they should have beat the Chiefs.
You look at the Patriots should be, but they have games like this, and they always suck in Miami. I do not understand the mental block that the Dolphins have. Only in Miami against them. The Steelers continue to lose these games. At some point, I'm just going to have to look at the Steelers and say, you're just wasting your talent at this point.
Yeah, you're like, not a good football team right now.
Super Bowl contenders don't go to Oakland and lose, period. End of story.
And oh, by the way, they play the Patriots and the Saints next 2 weeks.
Houston, I like, but I've never loved. I thought they were always a tier below. I'm not that concerned they lost Indianapolis this week. I think those two teams are, as I said Friday, talent-wise, they are very close.
Yep.
I still think Houston has the edge, but they are closer than it looks. I've always thought they were tier two. Chargers look pretty good, but they're still the Chargers. That team just likes to choke.
I think Baltimore.
I love that defense. But I mean, like, so the debate here between Baltimore, LA, Pittsburgh, Houston, New England, who's the second best
probably
team in the AFC?
Chargers. Probably the Chargers.
Probably the Chargers, but that team might have to go
the
road.
But the way we just said it, probably the Chargers. Like, I'm not super confident saying that.
That team hasn't exactly had a ton of postseason success. So,
I think this week we have Patriots, Steelers. And this week, it's at Heinz Field. It's in Pittsburgh.
Steelers could lose that division still. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility.
They're lucky that they're not tied right now with the Ravens, because the Ravens should have beaten the Chiefs. Yeah. They had every opportunity to take advantage of that. Now, they played to the last minute, but this is going to be a huge game this weekend for both teams.
Yeah.
And I think New England let one slip away, and Pittsburgh obviously had an opportunity to go up there and beat a bad team and wasn't able to do it. That has huge implications here. And from a fantasy perspective, we'll get back to this game specifically.
I mean, Kenny Stills has had a better connection with Ryan Tannehill than he has Brock Osweiler, so he might be somebody that you want to throw on your bench as a flyer if you have an opening there. I mean, I know he was nothing with Osweiler. He had no connection. But he did hook up with Tannehill pretty strongly in the first couple weeks of the regular season this year, if you remember. I continue to say that, again, Frank Gore is going to continue to be a thorn in the side of Kenny and Drake owners. I know, obviously, you got that last play of the game, which is fine. It made it up everything for you. But Frank Gore is being featured equally as much as Kenyon Drake is.
Yes, he is.
On the New England side, I mean, aside from Sony Michel, everybody else did what you wanted to. Gronkowski had a big game. Julian Edelman had a good game. Josh Gordon played pretty well. I mean, you got what you needed from there. James, you know, the running backs disappointed you a little bit. Sony Michel didn't do much with his carries. James White wasn't used a bunch. But, I mean, it is what it is. When New England goes to Miami, these things happen. And we'll talk about this on Friday.
Tom Brady is 1-6 in Miami in December.
I got to give Adam Gase some credit.
Yes.
That team is 7-6. I thought they were a 6-10 team at best.
I'm not firing him now.
You can't fire him. I don't care if he loses out. You're not firing
him. He started Brock Osweiler half the season.
Yeah.
And they're 7-6. And they just beat the Patriots
again. The offense
looks
decent. It doesn't look great.
And their defense has been pretty good all year long.
They're solid. They're a solid team on both sides of the ball.
Here's what I would say. I think Adam Gase has earned his right to at least try and see what Ryan Tannehill would look like for a full season being healthy. Because we haven't seen it. Adam Gase hasn't had Ryan Tannehill healthy for a full season since he's been in Miami. And that's the whole reason they brought him there, to get the best out of Ryan Tannehill.
And right now there's a four-way tie for the final wildcard spot. Baltimore, Miami, Indy, and Tennessee are all 7-6. I mean, they don't have the tiebreaker over Baltimore right now, but they have just as good of a chance to make the postseason as any of those teams. So,
yep, 100%.
And I don't think they're as talented as any of those other teams, aside from Tennessee. But Tennessee and Miami play very similar. Like, Tennessee and Miami are very similar teams in terms of just how they're constructed, and they don't make a ton of mistakes.
Yep, being well coached right now. All right, this was a great Sunday of football, by the way. Like the whole thing.
It was
a great Sunday of football. Great Sunday night football. Hopefully we get a great Monday night matchup tonight. But Chiefs-Ravens, we've talked about it a little bit. I thought the Ravens were going to be able to pull this game off. From a fantasy perspective, Mahomes, 377 yards and 2 touchdowns. Lamar Jackson, 147 yards but 2 touchdowns and 71 yards of rushing. He's the top rusher for that team. That's where this is interesting, because if you're messing around and you need somebody – now Big Ben had a little bit of an injury. I know people were worried about whether or not you're going to see him. I think he's going to play this weekend. I don't think that's going to be an issue. But listen, Lamar Jackson is becoming a very interesting fantasy play.
He really is. I'm trying to see where I had him ranked this week.
I think you said 9. Didn't you have him in your top 10?
I imagine I did him, so I'm – stalling while I'm looking.
You're
up.
Stalling, but
I had him. No, I had him 14 this
14.
Week. 14. I think that's where he's going to be. I think he's going to be top 15. If you're in the playoffs, my bet is you have somebody a single else. Quarterback league. You have a better option.
Yeah.
But I think if you're desperate, or again, maybe if you've been riding just Roethlisberger all season for whatever reason, or is Roethlisberger and Stafford, or Roethlisberger and Wentz.
I
finally dropped Wentz in fantasy a week ago in a single quarterback league.
Yep.
He might be an option. From a real life football standpoint, I think you saw what the downfall is of starting Lamar Jackson right now. In overtime, and even late in the fourth, where you know he fumbles the ball a ton. I mean that he fumbled 8 fumbles this year. I mean it's bad, and he is not sophisticated enough as a passer right now to be that much of a threat. Like they get the ball back with like a minute and a half to go in regulation. You're like, I don't, and the announcers are openly like, I don't know if we even try to throw here.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's my only concern with Baltimore right now is they're so one-dimensional.
Doing
that really, really well. Jackson and Gus Edwards are doing a great job when everybody knows they're going to run it down their throat, and they're doing it anyway. But at some point, you need to be multidimensional, and I think this kind of came back to the conversation I had with Jake and you on Friday of, I like Baltimore's defense a lot. I think they hold Kansas City under 30. We talked about it, hold Kansas City somewhere in the 20s, around 28, I think I said. But the problem is I can't see them keeping up offensively.
Yeah,
and when the game were on the line, we watched Patrick Mahomes drive this team down the field and make – I mean, that play he made to Tyreek Hill, between him and the play that Hill makes to not give up on it, is season highlight worthy.
For sure.
That was a drive that Baltimore can't do on offense. And in the end, Kansas City did just enough to win. Spencer Ware looked a lot better this week than he did last week. He got injured and was knocked out for a little bit.
But 75 yards, it's a good – I mean,
and he gets 5 catches for 54, too.
Yeah, if he catches a touchdown pass, you're in a really good space.
So he had a strong game. Travis Kelce is the number one tight end in fantasy, period.
Yep.
He will be getting drafted in the Gronk spot next year going into drafts.
Yep.
Tyreek Hill is a monster, as usual. Like, I mean, you know what you're going to get there. On the Baltimore side – I mean, Gus Edwards had an okay game. I mean, you're not starting any Baltimore receivers with Lamar Jackson. It's not happening.
No. But. Interesting discussion to be had is, now that they've lost the game, does Joe Flacco come back?
It's so
if they went into Kansas City and won, there's no way they're starting Joe Flacco.
I'm not a Joe Flacco fan, personally. My concern is I don't think this team can win multiple playoff games with Lamar Jackson.
I agree.
Right now. And again, I like Lamar Jackson.
Same, but he's got to grow as a quarterback.
But he can't put up – I don't know if he can put up enough points right now. And I don't know if they're going to be able to 2,000 Ravens their way into the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I just don't think that – I think the defense is good.
They're not
I think
great.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Chicago's defense.
Yeah.
Like and then that's my concern, where they are a really good defense, but they don't put up points on defense
like Chicago does
or like they used to in the old days. I don't know if Lamar Jackson would be able to put up enough points to go into New England, into Pittsburgh, who knows? Those games are always crazy. But into New England, into Kansas City, I just think that could be
trouble for them. It's going to be interesting to see what they do there, because they do have an opportunity to – still win this division. So I think you got to at least make sound decisions. And I'm not a Joe Flacco fan, but he can do more things than Lamar Jackson.
And yes, he's turnover prone, but so is Lamar Jackson.
So is Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson's turned the ball over at a stupid rate.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Lamar Jackson's been great, and I think they definitely sparked the team, but at a certain point, you got to have this discussion. Colts, Texans, the Colts, listen, this was one of those games they always play pretty tough. Houston was on a 9-game win streak, but Jake, I think, was the one who told us that when teams are on a 9-game win streak, when they're going for the 10th win, they're like 2-20 or something like that. It's an outrageous number. Andrew Luck, 399 yards and 2 touchdowns. Have yourself a fantasy day. T.Y. Hilton has almost 200 yards of receiving. It's a good game if you have Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton.
Eric Ebron gets in the end zone again.
Yeah, Eric Ebron gets in the –
terrible drops.
Yes, he did. As an Eric Ebron owner, it was frustrating, but he
– Lions fans just nodded their head in agreement.
But he scored me 17 points, and if you get 17 points from a tight end, you're feeling –
oh, you're golden.
You're golden.
Marlon Mack gets in the end zone as well. This was a game the Colts really, really needed. Like I said, they're in that mix now with Tennessee and Miami and Baltimore.
7-6 now.
At 7-6. You know, and for Houston, I know you have all those like numbers going into win streaks. Just mathematically, it gets more – difficult percentage-wise to win the following game. So, like, to win game 6 is more difficult than game 5, just how math works. But it goes back to what I was saying, where I think Houston is a good team. I don't think they're a great team. We're starting to maybe reevaluate who those teams are in the AFC right now, because I can't – I thought Pittsburgh was a 13-win roster, and I look at this team and I think that's not a great team. That's a good team. I could see them going in and winning a couple playoff games. There might be only one great team in the AFC.
Yeah.
And that's Kansas City.
I agree.
But I look at this Houston team and I say I'm still excited to see them. I'd like to see them use Lamar Miller a little bit more in this game. But, again, he didn't do a lot with his carry, so it's understandable. Not a huge game for Nuke Hopkins, but he gets in the end zone, so he salvages your day there. Deshaun Watson played okay. This was just, again, I think for me, I did a regular season like awards for fantasy football. You can read it at tdfantasy.com. They were done before this week's games. But my comeback player of the year was Andrew Luck.
Yeah,
he was my number two choice there. I think I picked Adrian Peterson. But either Peterson and Luck were my comeback players of the year, where he's picked up right where he left off despite missing 500 and something days with that arm injury.
Next game, we're going to talk about two teams that have been very disappointing, the Atlanta Falcons and the Green Bay Packers. The Packers get it done. They win 34-20. Both Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers put up probably good enough numbers to win you in fantasy this week. Matt Ryan, 262 and 3 touchdowns. Rodgers, as much as people painted it as a huge day, he didn't even have 200 yards of passing. 196 and 2 touchdowns. Aaron Jones, 78 yards and a touchdown. That's good. Davante Adams, 81 for a touchdown.
Davante Adams, by the way, is I still don't think we talk about him enough.
No, he's great.
I believe right now he's number two among all wide receivers in scoring.
Yeah.
Like, he was a guy that you took early in that second round, and it hasn't been a sexy pick, and nobody, you know, everyone's like, oh, look at Michael Thomas's catches, or look at Julio Jones, or look at, you know, how great, you know, Antonio Brown, Adam Thielen are. All those guys are getting outscored right now, except for aside from Michael Thomas and PPR, by Davante Adams.
Yep, Davante Adams is having himself a good year. And listen, if you drafted Julio Jones, this was the week you're thinking your lucky stars. He gets in the end zone twice and has 106 yards of receiving. That is about as good of a day as you're going to get from this version of Julio Jones in this offense, especially on the road. So you have a lot of the stars show out for you in fantasy. These two teams, from a football perspective, I'm not interested in talking about because neither one of them are going to do it.
No, and Green Bay got up early. This game was never in doubt. The Packers were going to win this game. On a funny football note, I know people were making fun of Joe Philbin for losing two challenges in the first 90 seconds of the game. He was right on both of them, by the way. And the referees were wrong even after review. He made the right call to challenge those two plays. So I know everyone's like, oh, look, it's like McCarthy again. He can't win a challenge. He was right.
Yeah.
The referees were wrong both times. So
next game we're going to get into here, the fighting Baker Mayfields. 26-20 final score. Baker Mayfield has turned himself into a starter in my two-quarterback league, 238 with one touchdown. Nick Chubb gets in the end zone.
Rashad Perryman's alive.
Rashad Perryman is alive.
He just hadn't really had that one play, but
disappointing though if you're a Cam Newton owner because he doesn't throw any touchdowns. That's tough for you. But listen, this team that looked pretty good for a while is now six and two. Yeah, they're now 6-7. This team does not look very good, and Cam Newton doesn't look great. This offense. I mean, McCaffrey's McCaffrey. He gets in the end zone twice and has 63 yards.
Is he the number three pick next year in fantasy?
Probably.
Are you going three running back? I don't know if Mahomes will go in the first round next year. I don't think Mahomes is going top three.
Yeah, I'm not taking a quarterback there. But I love McCaffrey.
Gurley, Saquon, McCaffrey in PPR. I think that's what it looks like next year.
I think so, and I think that's about what it should
be. Maybe Melvin Gordon. I mean, Melvin Gordon's in that conversation. I mean, he probably would be three if he didn't get hurt. But
yeah, I agree. I think he would be up there if he hadn't gotten injured. But McCaffrey's young, and he's such a threat both ways that they go to him in the end zone, which is a good thing because a lot of times those guys get a lot of yards, and then they look for somebody else. They look for the big back down there, and they give McCaffrey the ball, and he gets in the end zone a lot. That's huge from a fantasy perspective.
So, I mean, in this game, you know what you're looking for. The running backs are going to be the players that you want. If, like you said, as a Cam Newton owner, I'd be concerned.
Yeah.
Just the way this team is playing. The only thing that of note on each side, one on the Cleveland side is they went out of their way to use Jarvis Landry in a lot of different ways. And I know we've talked on the show the last couple of weeks that he's kind of been the forgotten man in the new Hugh Jackson-less offense in Cleveland, where he just wasn't being used the same way. They got him involved early for that short touchdown run early in the first quarter. They end up using a little bit. He only gets five touches in the game, but they're finding – at least it looked like they're trying to find creative ways for him to get involved in the offense. And from Carolina, as bad as things are, if the Vikings lose to the Seahawks tonight, which is what I think is going to happen, they're only a half game back of the playoffs still.
Yep.
I know this team has lost five in a row and the sky is falling and everything's terrible. But from a football perspective, they are still in the thick of it.
Yeah, and it's still a good football team. I'm waiting for them to turn it around. I think these games, you expect that they were going to go in and win this game, maybe when you looked at this game on paper. But the Browns have been better, and Baker Mayfield is a fighter, and he's had this team going, and they're 5-7-1 now.
He's good. He's a good player. Like, I just, that throw he makes to Breshad Perriman in the beginning of that game, where it just almost effortlessly just 60 yeah. yards downfield, was just a magnificent throw.
I'm really excited to see this team next year and what the growth and what mm-hmm. they can put around him. Next game we're going to get into, we could just go right to George Kittle because my, oh my, 210 yards and one touchdown, 20-14 final score. I think it was Jake that said, yes, the Broncos have been playing well, but they're going to lose out from here on out and miss the playoffs. They're now 6-7. The Niners are obviously out of it. So from a football perspective, the Broncos are still there. Because the AFC kind of is a hot mess in the middle.
But
there.
They're going to still have to hop teams now. Yeah, if they win this game, they're in that mix with the tennis, with four other
and
teams.
And this is a game you look at and you go, this is a bad football team that you have to beat on the road, and they don't get it done. So I think from that perspective, it's a little frustrating. Nick Mullins, though, quiet, great fantasy game, 332 yards of passing and two touchdowns. That's pretty damn good for Nick Mullins.
I kneel at the altar of Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
If anybody has ever doubted Kyle Shanahan, what he's been able to do with Kirk Cousins, what he's been able to do with Matt Ryan, what he's able to do with Jimmy Garoppolo. We still haven't fully seen what he's able to do with Jimmy Garoppolo. He only has a handful of games with him. But like Nick Mullins?
Yeah, Nick freaking Mullins.
I mean, Nick Mullins, Jeff Wilson had a big game. I mean, like, with all due respect, everybody in the
NFL. They're backups.
These are nobodies.
Yes.
That Kyle Shanahan is making look competent on offense, even in losses. If I'm a Niners fan, I'm at least optimistic. There are a lot of problems on that team. There's a lot of defensive problems, which I don't think they anticipated 2 or 3 years ago when they spent all those high picks on that side of the ball. But on offense, I think they're set for the future. George Kittle's going to be interesting to see where he goes in fantasy drafts next year because I think a lot of people – I think Kelsey's going to go as tight end one. I think Zach Ertz is going to go as tight end two.
I agree.
The question is do people take Gronk three? Do they take Kittle three? Does Gronk and Brady retire with Belichick? Whatever, all that weird stuff. But Kittle has been consistent with Garoppolo, with Mullins.
I will tell you, I'm not taking Gronk over George Kittle.
I think people are gonna, that's going to be the debate. Who's
I think people who don't pay enough attention to football are going to take Gronk off name only. But Gronkowski has deteriorated, and that is significant. And
as Sony Michel has gone up, his usage in the offense has not been the same.
And you have to, at a certain point, you just have to talk about the fact that he cannot stay healthy. He just, if he misses five games, it's not worth it to have him on your football team. It's just not. It's too many games to miss, and it's too frustrating to try and stream a guy each and every week.
And on the Broncos side, I mean, this is the worst game of Philip Lindsay's young career. Yep. He gets in the end zone, so he salvages it a little bit. But Royce Freeman looked good in his carries. Again, I think both those running backs are going to be. Might be a little frustrating to fantasy owners next year because I think it might be more of a time split than people anticipate. And then Deshaun Hamilton looked really good this game. This was his breakout opportunity with Emmanuel Sanders hurt. Didn't hear from Courtland Sutton at all, which I was really surprised by, but it was good to see Deshaun Hamilton get in the end zone.
Next game we're going to talk about here, the Chargers get a victory at home 26-21. It was a little closer than I anticipated to be, but man, if you are a Joe Mixon owner, he has a great game, over 100 yards and a touchdown, gets in the end zone. Keenan Allen, 78 yards and one touchdown. Austin Eckler gets in the end zone with 66 yards. Phillip Rivers has a good day, not a great day, 220 yards, one touchdown. But most of the guys that you expected from a fantasy perspective have a good day. It wasn't a great day, but I think you and I have talked about on this podcast a lot about Austin Eckler. So for him to get in the end zone was a big deal for him.
It was. You know, I'm an Eckler and Joe Mixon owner. So it was a good day fantasy-wise for me from this game. You know, keep an eye on Eckler. I believe got a stinger in this game. So just kind of keep an eye on him this week because he suffered a few of those injuries, and you want to kind of see what his status is going. I would not be surprised to see Melvin Gordon come back this week either. So if you're an Austin Eckler owner and you've been playing him either as an RB2 or a flex, just pay very, very close attention to him this week. In terms of like Keenan Allen, he's been proving the last few weeks why he's a wide receiver one, and he's solidly in that category now. I'm just, from a football perspective, I'm content but disappointed a little bit with the Chargers' performance in this game. I know they got up early, but they let Cincinnati claw back in. I need to see – I know it's so cliched, and I can hear people rolling their eyes as they're listening back to this. But there needs to be some sort of killer instinct on this Chargers team. This team just –
When
the Saints are on, and I know this may be the bad week because they end up only beating Tampa by 14.
Doesn't matter.
The Saints are on, they beat people up.
Yeah.
They beat up inferior teams, particularly when they're at home.
Yeah.
the Chargers, I know they beat up on Arizona, but they had to get down 10-0 before they did it. I need to see them have games like that more often.
For sure.
Where they put teams away by outscoring them. They don't just salt the game away. They put teams away.
Especially when you have that offense. Especially when you have Phillip Rivers and the weapons that they have. Now, Melvin Gordon comes back. Maybe we see that a little bit. But I expected to see more out of them. And if I am going to put them in that you're the second best team in the AFC category, I got to see the pedal to the metal.
And that's where the context comes in. I'm not looking at the Chargers as a playoff caliber team. I'm trying to evaluate the Chargers as a Super Bowl contender.
Agreed.
And when you reach that next caliber, I have to be a lot more critical of you.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we're going to talk about this game in a little bit, but there's a certain defense, certain rush defense on a very good team in the NFC that I look at and I say, I now am concerned because I consider you a Super Bowl contender and you have this major flaw.
Yeah.
For the Chargers, it's that they don't ever seem to put themselves in a position where they don't play down to their opponent.
Yeah, put it away. Yes. Put it away. All right, this next game we could throw away. That is the Detroit Lions and the Arizona Cardinals. I'm not joking.
This game's a waste of time.
We're not going to talk about this game because from a fantasy perspective, there's nothing to talk about. And from a football perspective, there's nothing to talk about.
I watch a lot of football.
Yep.
Right? And I do a lot of research for fantasy and all that fun stuff. I literally have never heard of Trent Sherfield in my life. He was the leading writer. I'm not joking. I'm not trying to say that to be funny.
No.
I am, but I'm not. Like, I literally have never heard of this human
being. No, nobody else has either. This game is a waste of time. Do not start anybody from Arizona at this point. And Matthew Stafford should be as far away from your fantasy team as you can possibly. The Golden Tate trade looks absolutely horrendous for the Detroit Lions.
The Tate trade was abysmal. This team's not coached well. I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry, this team is not coached well on either side of the ball.
No.
I know it's – oh, well, they held Arizona 3 points. That's – this Arizona team is
– okay.
But, like, I just – I mean, Darius Slay is great. I will say that. Darius Slay is – it used to be Xavier Rhodes was the quarterback that was so good and nobody talked about him. And then
now it's Darius
Slay. Now the Vikings play on primetime all the time, so people know that. It's Darius Slay.
Because he plays on a bad football team. For him, I hope he gets to go play somewhere else.
Two of the best corners in the NFC in this game, and that's the nicest thing I can say about it.
Yep, that's the nicest thing you can say about it. All right, this game we talked about briefly.
If Karen Johnson is not going to play again this year,
They're going to shut him down. There's no reason to bring him back and risk
drop him at this
injured.
Point. He's droppable. Pick up somebody that can help you.
The next game we're going to talk about, Raiders-Steelers. Obviously, we talked about a little bit from a football perspective. 24-21, the Steelers lose a game that they had to win. They had to win. As many games now, they've lost three in a row now. This team is not playing good football when it matters. Because teams that win
They're
the Super Bowl –
They're just not playing good football.
No, November and December is when you start to figure out what teams have and what they're made of. This team now has to play New England next week, and they have to play the New Orleans Saints still. I'm not convinced this team is going to make it to the playoffs.
I think they will just because – but I'm not convinced they're going to win the division.
No,
but
absolutely not.
But I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a realistic possibility because right now, let me double check on this.
They're seven, five, and one.
Okay, so they are half a game above being in ninth in the AFC. I mean, to your point, maybe they could miss the playoffs.
Don't tie with Cleveland at the beginning of the season.
Yeah,
literally. Do not like.
Also, either way, if Cleveland have won that game, we're talking about them as like
borderline playoff team.
They might be there.
Borderline playoff team.
Look, not having James Conner obviously hurt them. Jalen Samuels did not look good.
No,
28
Stephen
Ridley
yards.
Looked worse.
Yep.
I know he got into the end zone. But.
And Ben was injured slightly, came back, played. I mean, he has 282 and two touchdowns. Derek Carr had a good fantasy day for you, 322 and two touchdowns.
And I should clarify, Samuels didn't look good on the ground. I mean, he caught seven passes in the game.
Yeah,
they're going to use him in different ways, but he didn't look great on the ground. Juju looked off. Which play by Juju do we want to talk about?
The tippy toe
in the back of the end zone, or the play that should have tied the game for the Steelers to end regulation?
Yeah, if they knew what the hell they were doing, and if their kicking game was not their kicking. I mean, the kicking game in the NFL in general this year has
been garbage.
Yeah, and that's a head scratching moment where you're looking at that and going. Man,
you gotta make that kick.
There are certain moves where you get yourself in a position to make to tie that football game and go. And you knew if they were going to the overtime.
Yeah, they're winning that game.
Pittsburgh's winning that game, but gotta say, Juju Smith-Schuster, 130 yards and two touchdowns. As an Antonio Brown owner, he's eating away at Antonio Brown's numbers.
And right now, he should be.
And as the statistics will show, when Ben does not force the ball to Antonio Brown, they have better games. I know they lose this game, But I think that they're going to continue to do that. James Conner, it was reported that he could be back this week. So
they have to hope. I mean, yeah, they're going to need him down the stretch there. It's funny for Juju, for a guy that was people thought didn't have enough speed coming out.
You watch
that play at the end of regulation where he just blows by everybody, gets out of bounds in time. On the Raiders side, I mean, Doug Martin got in the end zone. Again, he continues to just hang around outside to flex play territory. You're not loving it. Cook has been good. 116 yards in this game. That's really about it. Like, there's not much to say about the Raiders. I know. I mean, they got this win. They won the game, but there's really not, from a fantasy perspective, much to say about them. I think you know at this point who you're playing, and it's really Cook's probably the only player you're even considering starting on a weekly basis.
Football perspective, this next game had a lot of implications. 29-23 final score, Dallas Cowboys, for all intents and purposes, pretty much make sure that the Philadelphia Eagles are not going to make the postseason. I know they're technically, statistically still in it, but there's going to have to be a lot of things to happen. And when you can't control your own destiny, it makes things really hard. It essentially won the division for Dallas, and it essentially put the Eagles away, which as somebody who thought this team was going to come back and be strong this season, I think it's been a huge disappointment to watch them play. At the end of the season, we'll definitely regroup and talk about disappointments. They will definitely be in that category. And biggest surprises or biggest winners of the trades this year is definitely Dallas. Amari Cooper, 217 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Tip one in overtime.
And oh, by the way, Dak Prescott had 455 yards and 3 touchdowns. Oh my God. And nobody was probably starting.
So here's what I want to talk about. I want to pull this up because one – we'll get back to the Dak Prescott thing in 1 second because I got to find the thing I need there. Ezekiel Elliott is slowly moving his way into MVP category.
Yep, 113 yards, didn't get in the end zone.
I know we've given it to Mahomes or Breeze or Gurley, but Ezekiel Elliott
still has got a couple of games that matter
is fighting his way.
Yep.
I'm trying to stall here while I find this. To give credit to Amari Cooper because I've been highly critical.
I have to give credit to Amari Cooper because I was hardly – listen, nobody has ever doubted the talent that Amari Cooper has. He just never played up to his potential, and maybe – I saw an interview of him post game yesterday, and he was it was such a great interview talking about how, as much as I despise the Cowboys, playing in Dallas brings out some of the best in certain players. And certain players, but listen, he left Oakland in a terrible position. Oakland, if they were winning, is a great place to play.
Sure.
But being in that organization right now is dysfunctional, and it's a terrible place to play. He talked about what it means to him to be playing in Dallas and how the expectations are higher and the level of practice that's happening and how he feels revitalized. And that's obviously reflective in the way that he's playing because 217 yards and 3 freaking touchdowns. I was playing against Amari Cooper and I just said, well, I'm losing this. Like, all right, this week's over. Like, he single-handedly won the game because the people who I were playing against had Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara, who had horrible weeks, and Amari Cooper made up for it with this unbelievable performance.
So it's something interesting because with Dak Prescott, because he's somebody that I was kind of like interested in when I did my preseason rankings. I ended up having him 17th. I pulled this back up from the preseason. The interesting thing about him was last 2 years, he finished in points per game among quarterbacks. 2 years ago, 10th. Last year, 11th. Right now, he's in the top 15.
Wow.
So I think he's going to be somebody that when you get outside of the obvious like 10 quarterbacks, that if you're in a 2QB league or you're looking for somebody off your bench, he might be a player that you go and think about because he might finish 3 consecutive seasons in the top 12 for fantasy points per game. And I think nobody's talked about that.
No.
And he had a brutal start to the season, but he looks – I mean, every statistic with him, every number, accuracy, yards, touchdowns, everything has changed since they added Amari Cooper into this offense. So I think that's someone to watch going forward. On the Philadelphia side, Carson Wentz had a big game.
He had a big game
with 3 touchdowns. Alshon Jeffery gets in the end zone, but it's just like
it's too little, too late.
Too little, too late. They still can't run the ball.
This is a frustrating team if you're an Eagles fan. Just go watch the 76ers play basketball instead. Now is the time to talk about Sunday Night Football. If you are a Chicago Bears defense owner, just give yourself a pat on the back because man, oh man. It was a great night to be an owner of the Chicago Bears defense. Jared Goff had 180 yards and no touchdowns.
And
4 picks.
Yeah.
And 4 picks was
4.
Was sacked.
Jeff Fisher was coaching again.
Was sacked 3 times and had 17 hurries in that game. Todd Gurley had 28 yards. 28. Todd Gurley, the guy we've been talking about for an MVP discussion. This Chicago Bears team, you guys know, obviously, I'm a Chicago fan. But, man, there is not, there could not have been a better defensive performance than what we saw against an offense that has looked unstoppable for most of the season. And quietly, my guy Jordan Howard, 101 yards
back to back
receiving.
Really strong games for Jordan Howard.
It's that time of the year we start running the football.
Yeah, so I mean, if you and again, I was worried about him. I said there was a point where he was the candidate for most disappointing player
for sure
of the year that I did, and we'll see if he has some relevance now in fantasy playoffs with back to back really strong weeks. Tariq Cohen got his as well. I know Trubisky didn't have a great game. He's not 100% yet. The Rams can't stop anybody on the ground, but they are pretty good at getting pressure at the quarterback.
Yep.
And when I said earlier we talked about that, that's the big weakness for LA is they cannot contain the running game for against anybody.
No.
They have a lot of talent on that defense, but their rush defense has been abysmal. This is the great equalizer for Chicago. This is the formula that Chicago has to say, okay, how do we go into LA and win? How do we beat the top teams in the league? This is how they can do it with this kind of defense and this kind of performance. I mean, if you're a Bears fan, you have to be ecstatic right now. If you're a Trubisky fantasy owner, I think he's fine going into the weeks ahead.
Yeah.
Again, he's got to get healthy. This is a big opportunity for him. But if you're a Rams owner, I think you just – if you own any of the Rams, you just got to shrug. Like, Goff's been great for you all year. Todd Gurley's the fantasy MVP, arguably. You know, Robert Woods in a PPR league got enough to be okay. Brandon Cooks didn't have a great game. But these guys have been carrying you all year. They're not going to face a better defense the rest of the season.
No, they go back to back. So next week they play the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. Another, but they're playing in LA. The following week they go play the Cardinals in Arizona. So they end the season with great matchups. Eagles, Cardinals, 49ers at home.
Yeah.
They have two of those three games are at home, and the one game is a 45-minute flight to Arizona to play a very bad football team in Arizona. So if you are a fantasy owner of these guys, the Eagles are not great against the run, and the Cardinals are terrible against the run. So you're looking and going, yeah, Todd Gurley's going to bounce back and be just fine. The reality is nobody is the Bears' defense right now, and don't expect that performance from anybody else. And from I own Jared Goff, and I'm playing him all the rest of the
week. Yeah.
I just didn't play him against the Bears.
The one benefit that this game might have for Rams owners, if you play in a playoff that does include Week 17,
yes,
it's now increasingly likely that game is going to matter for home field throughout.
Yep.
For the Rams. They have the same record as the Saints. Obviously, the Saints have the tiebreaker because they beat them.
Yep, so they're going to have to play.
So this might force them to play all their starters, at least for most of the game in Week 17.
All right, let's preview tonight's football game because we, as we said at the beginning of last week or on Friday's podcast, we anticipated that we were going to have a good week. And, man, we had a great week of football. We had a great Sunday night game, and we have a great Monday night game with a lot of actual football implications and probably quite a few fantasy implications for you guys that are in your postseason for fantasy this week. We have the Minnesota Vikings. 6-5-1 going on the road to play the Seattle Seahawks. The Bears, they're looking up at the Bears now in this division.
They're not catching the Bears.
They're not catching the Bears. But they have to win to continue to try and keep up with the NFC because one of the teams they're looking at is this team that they're playing tonight.
So this game is – so let's take it from a football perspective first and we'll talk about fantasy. Obviously, this is a matchup with the two teams holding the two wild card spots right now. But this game is extremely important for both, but especially for Minnesota because, as I mentioned earlier, they lose this game. They're only a half a game above Carolina, Philadelphia, and Washington.
Yep.
I think Washington we can write off. There's just no chance they're going to be able to get back in that picture. But Carolina and Philadelphia have enough to, again, if they're only a half game behind Minnesota, they might be able to catch them. If they lose this game, they're only one game behind Green Bay, who, again, I don't think has enough to catch them, but you're still within a range of, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility. For and Seattle, if they lose, they'll be a full game. But both of these teams are just trying to avoid being in a spot where they're going to could easily fall out. Because at that point, it's not like you're trying to compete with one other team. You're competing within three or four other teams. And one of those three or four teams could go on a little bit of a run to end the season. And then all of a sudden, you're in trouble. From a fantasy point of view in this game, I expect to see a lot of running game on the ground. Seattle is trying to not replicate what Baltimore is doing, but they're trying to run the ball like Baltimore is doing. Minnesota, Dalvin Cook has looked pretty good the last few weeks. He's finally starting to get up to speed. This is something Jake talked about in the preseason, that this would be the time of year that Dalvin Cook would get back up to speed following the ACL surgery and the other hamstring injuries that he had this year. if you've been, you know, there are a lot of interesting fantasy plays here. I've been really excited to be a Russell Wilson owner recently, considering how bad of a way it started for him. I think I had Cousins somewhere outside my top 12 this week. I'm not as optimistic for them. This game should be one of two ways. It's either going to be moderately good offensively, both teams are going to be in the 20s and things are going to go, or this game is going to be stupid. And I can't decide which one it's going to be yet. Like, this is going to be some stupid, like, 38 to 31 game where
– it could be.
Where everybody's scoring a ton of points in the second half. But for me, I look at this game and I think by best estimation here that they're both teams are going to try to run the ball as much as they possibly can, especially in the first half. And then I think in the second half, there's going to be a lot of fireworks through the air.
So these are the remaining schedule for the Vikings and the Seahawks. The Vikings, obviously they play tonight against each other. Then the Vikings play Miami at home. They play the Lions on the road, and they play the Bears at home. Seattle has the 49ers on the road, the Chiefs at home, and the Cardinals at home. I think the schedules are about even.
Yeah.
They both have one tough matchup.
They have one obvious win, one obvious loss, and one kind of one toss-up.
Yes. And that is why this game means a lot, because these two teams are right in the thick of this. And as they said, these two teams should – If all things happen the way that it should, these are the two teams that should end up in the postseason. These are the two better teams. They're Carolina, Philadelphia, Washington, Green Bay. None of those teams have shown you that they're going to win a game in the postseason.
And the benefit is like Carolina has to play New Orleans twice before the end of the year. Philadelphia has to play the Rams. They also have to play the Texans. Of all the schedules, Seattle and Minnesota have easier schedule paths than anybody else.
They also – Minnesota for their – they hold the tiebreaker against Green Bay. So if they end up being close there, they hold the tiebreaker because they tied in one game and they beat them in another game.
And Green Bay has a couple easy games on their schedule too, but they also have to play the Bears.
Yeah. Listen, if they lose this weekend,
the Packers have to win out. But if the Packers are able to beat the Bears, then all of a sudden, that's a conversation because I'm double checking who they have there. Because if they're able to beat the Bears, again, in Chicago, I don't think it's likely, they go to the Jets and then they finish at home against the Lions.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, they're right back in that picture as well.
For sure. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks from that perspective. There's a lot of teams in both the NFC and the AFC that can still mix it up and make it to the postseason. Jamie, what's your prediction for tonight?
I think the Seahawks win this. I think they cover the 3-point spread, and it was bounced around between 3 and 3.5. Again, as I reiterate the point I made on Friday, I need to see Kirk Cousins go on the road and win these types of big games and big moments against good teams.
Yep.
And I haven't seen it yet. I think he can. I'm still optimistic, where I've kind of made up my mind that like Matthew Stafford can't, because I know that's I talked about on Friday, the hypocrisy a little bit that I have internally with Kirk Cousins and Matthew Stafford. I still think Kirk Cousins can. I just need to see him do it.
Yeah. Agreed. This is going to be a really interesting matchup. I think if Minnesota wants to be the team that they thought they were, they have to win this game. They have to, because they don't have any remaining games where I'm going to go, you've really proven it to me that this team belongs in the top of the NFC caliber, because you play Chicago week 17.
Yeah.
There's no game remaining that I'm going to look at them and go, I'm getting a true test of what this team is. They have to go up and win this week, and I don't think that they're going to. I think that Seattle's going to handle their business at home. I think they're going to be able to establish the run against Minnesota, and I think they're going to be able to keep the tempo going, because it's tough to play in Seattle. It's not the same defense. It's not the Legion of Boom, for sure, but this team – it's still a tough place to play,
and
Pete Carroll's got this team playing really damn good.
I know he's not here right now, but I know Jake believes the opposite. I think Jake has been really high on the talent of the Vikings. He picked them to go into New England and beat them.
Yep.
That didn't happen. He picks them to beat the Seahawks in this game. I'm not questioning the talent on Minnesota.
No, they have a lot of talent.
On paper, that is one of the best teams.
Show it to me.
But I haven't seen it.
Show it to me.
I haven't seen it this year.
Prove it to me. I haven't seen it. And I watched this team up close on Sunday Night Football just get manhandled by the Chicago Bears. Show me something, Kirk Cousins, because I haven't seen you play a good team well. And that's the thing. That's the knock on him. He beats up on the bad teams, but can't beat the good teams. You got to go beat these teams that are good if you want to be a true contender in the NFL. Jamie, how can everybody follow you on social media?
You can follow me at JME Eisner on Instagram and at Jamie Eisner on Twitter.
And guys, you can follow me at @_sports_page with an I on both Twitter and Instagram. And you should follow @_TD Fantasy on both Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to enjoy Monday Night Football, and good luck with your fantasy matchups.
Hello, TD Fantasy listeners. Jamie Eisner here, telling you about the ultimate fantasy football draft experience. You've heard us talk about it on the show before. Fantasy football at sea. Think about what you were doing this past draft night. Were you just sitting on your couch? Were you stuck at the office, hoping your boss didn't see you? That's no fun at all. Isn't fantasy football supposed to be fun? Why not upgrade and do your 2019 draft on a cruise to the Bahamas where you can get the best advice and party with the top fantasy analysts and former NFL players? Beach, sun, fantasy football, TD Fantasy will be there. That is a tough combo to beat. Go to fantasyfootballatsea.com for more information and learn how you can book today.